This is
The Future's So Bright, I Gotta Wear Shades.
A Captain America, the Winter Soldier, Avengers movieverse fanfic. Written by Kiara Sayre and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated PG-13, contains the pairing James Bucky Barnes Steve Rogers, with additional tags for post Captain America the Winter Soldier, Bucky versus the Future, Fluff. Author's notes. This is a birthday present for Chaya, who wanted Bucky discovering all of his favorite things about the future. I think I got all the specifics you mentioned, plus a few that I added in just for kicks. Happy birthday, a couple hours early! Many thanks to Desdemone for the beta. Contains strong language, depictions of therapy that are completely divorced from reality, and fluff levels that may induce cavities. The Abbott and Costello sketch mentioned towards the end is the classic Who's On First sketch. www.youtube.com/watch?v=k_t_c_r_a_x_v-fg. Which is worth watching in its entirety because it's hilarious. I got a crazy teacher, he wears dark glasses. Things are going great, and they're only getting better. I'm doing alright, getting good grades. The future's so bright. I gotta wear shades. I gotta wear shades. I gotta wear shades. The sharper image. It's like the Stark Expo, but in a mall. Bucky could spend, and has spent, hours just looking at the gadgets and doodads and thingamabobs disappearing when Steve's trying to get him to buy clothes or luggage or a new computer or whatever other normal things Bucky's supposed to get. Steve always finds him lying in one of the massage chairs, halfway to a power nap. On one such occasion, Bucky hears Steve's resigned sigh, followed by a tired, "Really, Buck?" Bucky doesn't even bother opening his eyes, just reaches one hand out to pat the armrest of the display massage chair next to him. "Come on, Steve. Live a little." Steve inevitably gives in, and they sit there for a while, letting the chairs do their thing. Eventually, though, Steve drifts off into what isn't quite a doze, but is unguarded enough that he doesn't freak out when he hears Bucky get up from his chair, only opens his eyes in time to see Bucky come back with something that looks like an oversized spindly metal spider, with its legs swooping to form an elongated, almost a sphere. "Bucky, what in God's name is that?" Steve asks, relaxed enough that he doesn't get out of the chair. "It's a scalp massager," says Bucky, and shoves it over Steve's head. Well, not so much over as onto, so that the ends of the spindly parts scritch gently against Steve's scalp, in a way that makes him go boneless and inarticulate almost immediately. "See?" Bucky says. "Told you this place was amazing." Says Steve. Exciting new ways to express oneself. Bucky has always considered himself something of a connoisseur of filthy language. It came from working on the docks, and in the trenches, and the seemingly endless supply of foreign language cusses that Gabe and Frenchie knew between them. Turns out, the 21st century
has even more. It stands for, "Adios, motherfucker, you're on your own," Sam says with a grin. And Bucky wants to give it a standing ovation.
AMF yo-yo.
Twat waffle, Clint says. That's my favorite. Or douche canoe.
Does Steve swear?
Sam wonders. I don't think I've ever heard him.
He does,
Bucky says. You just have to earn it.
Gross,
Clint says.
No, like, it's gotta be really bad. He's gotta be really angry,
Bucky says.
It's from when he was a USO showgirl. He was kissing babies and posing with dames. And as much as he hated it, I think he just got in the habit. Although,
he looks around the living room on the tower, making sure Steve's not in sight.
If you want to know how to get him to really let loose, you just gotta beat him at something. Card games work real nice. He's a competitive son of a bitch.
Which leads directly to...
video games.
Bucky beats Steve and the rest of the team on Rainbow Road 4 times in a row. And Steve cusses so long and so loud and so detailed that Jarvis steps in and offers to rig the game for him to make sure he'll win next time. Steve blinks, suddenly brought out of it, and says, "Well, thank you, Jarvis, but no, I want to win honestly." This means that Steve will never win. And the next round they play, Bucky sees Stark taking notes every time Steve explodes. Bucky wins again anyway.
Microfiber blankets.
Bucky sleeps everywhere. Being a professional kind of superhero, kind of assassin, kind of bodyguard for Steve, who apparently in 70 years never learned how to avoid getting hit in the face, whether by aliens or Nazis or whoever intends on dominating the Earth today, leaves him a surprising amount of free time, whether he's in the apartment he shares with Steve in Brooklyn or in the tower to let Stark take yet another look at his arm. And the blankets these days? He would have killed for one of these blankets during the war. No, really. He might legitimately have killed a man. But only if they were Hydra. Or just Nazis. They're so soft and cozy. Like you remember your first blanket from when you were a child, and all you remember is safe and warm, and not scratchy or holes everywhere. They come big, too. Big enough to wrap around himself multiple times if he wants to. And sometimes he does. Once, he does so apparently a little too well before falling asleep on Stark's couch. And Barton sits on his head and claims he mistook the Bucky burrito for a long and pretentiously weird cushion. Really, the only problem is that some of the blankets rub against each other while he sleeps, and he's woken up more than once accidentally discharging static into his left arm.
Modern dancing.
Steve expresses active disinterest in modern dancing, but he was never much of a dancer anyway. He always thought it was about the dame, not the dance itself. But for Bucky, it was never about the dame. It was about the physicality, the partnership, anticipating the exact motion that will tell your partner to expect a spin and not a dip.
Well, okay. It was a little about the dames, too.
And now there are all these movies on the internet that show all the different ways there are of dancing now.
whole new styles for entire types of music that didn't exist in the 40s. And it's not just steps and turns anymore. Hips, asses, torsos, breasts. There are entire styles of dancing for parts of a woman's anatomy that weren't supposed to move at all in Bucky's day. Rubbing up against other parts of their partner's anatomy that weren't supposed to touch at all in Bucky's day. And some of it, to be honest, is just about control of his body. Just because he used to be a weapon, used to only move as instructed for efficiency and for a purpose, doesn't mean that he has to keep doing it. Sometimes it's worth it just to imagine the look on Pierce's face if he knew what his asset was doing to the body that was so carefully maintained. Natasha finds him in the tower one day with his laptop out and a YouTube video up entitled "How to Moonwalk." 3 hours later, Steve comes home to find them both in the gym, Natasha teaching Bucky how to lift her so she can get a decent ballet practice partner for once. Bucky literally moonwalks backwards into the shadows to escape the conversation, and Steve laughs so hard that the ballet is all but forgotten. Food. There's something about a Coney Island hot dog that just stays with you. Even if Steve would insist that what stays with you is the indigestion. That said, there's food from everywhere available in New York now. Thai food, and Sudanese food, and Cuban food, and Vietnamese food, and sushi, and curry, and Italian restaurants that specify which part of Italy they cook from, and it's just, it's a lot. And Bucky loves it. He starts building up a collection of cookbooks, starting with a simple American cookbook that breaks the recipes out by region. Chicago deep dish style pizza turns out to be an affront against man and nature, but the recipes from the South work out pretty well, and Bucky becomes a master of whipping up hush puppies. After that, he extends beyond the US and, well, he has some time on his hands since the Avengers have been very, very nice to him, but haven't suggested he actually start crime fighting yet. He's pretty sure they're asking his therapist for advice, who is probably right about these things. So he basically goes to the grocery store or the nearest farmer's market, finds something he's never heard of, and then Googles it back at the tower to figure out what he can do with it. Steve's eyes bug out with happiness after Bucky makes a starfruit upside-down cake. So Bucky will call it a win. Therapy. Bucky didn't like therapy at first. Scratch that. Bucky literally contemplated murdering his therapist at first. It had little or nothing to do with the therapist herself. Her name is Sarah. She's old enough to at least have heard about Bucky's generation from a few generations before her. And she is the nicest stubborn son of a bitch that Bucky has ever met. She's good. Too good. At making Bucky feel things. And refusing to shy away from the impact. And in their third session, she asks a question that makes Bucky pull a knife on her. She looks him in the eye and says to him, "Right now, we're just talking, James. These are just words, and they can't hurt you. This." And she pulls a taser out of her desk drawer. It is a taser. And I understand that it hurts a lot. I would prefer that we keep talking,
Because while I'm fairly certain you could kill me with that knife, I will at least try to defend myself, and that will just cause a whole lot of unnecessary fuss. Bucky puts his knife away. Sarah puts her taser away. And Bucky feels a lot better for knowing that it's there. In their fifth session, after 4.5 hours over 3 weeks of debating whether Bucky can truly be held responsible for the actions of the Winter Soldier, and whether his consistently gruesome fantasies about murdering Arnim Zola and anyone else affiliated with S.H.I.E.L.D. are worrisome, she bursts his bubble of guilt by saying, "Well, James, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're saying that when Zola made you do things, it didn't matter that you didn't want to do them, because it was the action that mattered. But you're also saying that the fact that you haven't murdered anyone still with Hydra doesn't matter because you do want to. It seems you're having your cake and eating it. Either only actions matter or only thoughts matter, but whichever way it is, it seems that you're at least doubling your portion of guilt." That was their fifth session. The woman is a powerhouse of taking no shit. Not from Bucky, not from Hydra, not from anyone. And by the time Sarah suggests that they go down to once a week, Bucky has cried in her office on 7 different occasions, beaten her at poker twice, and been beaten at poker about 12 times, had 23 panic attacks, and bought her a bouquet of flowers the size of her head after a breakthrough that had him crying into Steve's shoulder while Steve cried into his. It was very cathartic. And if the hugging turned into other, more comforting activities, well, Bucky doesn't need therapy for any of that. The internet. "Bucky, are you still awake?" Steve says at 4 a.m, coming through the living room of the tower in his jogging gear. "I'm an experimental super soldier assassin. I don't need sleep," Bucky says, typing feverishly into his laptop. Steve sighs. "Are you arguing with the people on the internet again?" Bucky looks up at Steve, his mouth tightened into a highly judgmental line. "Do you have any idea how stupid they are?" he says. Steve shakes his head. "Baseball or politics?" Bucky licks his lips and says, "Eurovision." There are some things from Bucky's time as the Winter Soldier that will stay with him forever. His obsession with Eurovision is one of the less dangerous, yet more inexplicable ones. "Well," Steve says, "you tell him, Buck. I got him on the ropes." Cell phones. "Steve. Steve, are you there? Did you know this capitalized your name for you? Steve, where is the question mark? I think my fingers are too big for this phone." "It updated and moved all the symbols. How do I make it unupdate? Steve, why aren't you texting me back? Steve, are you alive?
Steve, I will come after you and avenge you if you're dead. Bucky, I know you know how to use the phone. I'm not dead. And try to check your text messages before sending them instead of pretending you can't find the backspace. If the future wanted me to use the right symbols, they wouldn't have moved them. Life's too short to spell check texts. See? I said spell check. I'm awesome at the future. TV binges. Clint tells Bucky that the best way to catch up on American politics is to watch all of The West Wing. So Bucky does. In about 3 days. It turns out to be a mistake. While it does give him a good sense of how modern politics work, that is, a bunch of neurotic, crazy people making somewhat arbitrary decisions while talking faster than Bucky would have thought physically possible. And it's certainly enjoyable and addictive. Everything's pretty out of date. And also, Natasha isn't as flabbergasted by the whole map thing as Bucky would have hoped. The dialogue does remind him of the screwball comedies he and Steve used to go see, though. And Bucky finds a bunch of them online and watches them again with Steve for old time's sake. Modern clothing. The tower has more space for clothes than Bucky can even begin to know what to do with. For all that he'd been a snappy dresser in Brooklyn, he'd also been dirt poor, and he'd spent months, plural, in the same ratty sweater and trousers during the war. And after that, he hadn't so much worn clothes as been outfitted with tactical skin-covering equipment. There are just so many choices these days, with soft clothes and clothes that are barely there, and clothes that are so tight he can barely move his legs. And he can afford all of it, because he actually has money, which still feels like an unspeakable luxury, even though everything is ridiculously expensive these days. But skinny jeans are surprisingly comfortable, at least once he gets used to the sensation. And Steve seems to have a particular appreciation for when Bucky wears them. And t-shirts these days all say things on them. Funny things or logos or weird drawings. And Bucky finds that when he's having the kind of day when he can't shake off the weight of the past 70 years and snaps at everything and everyone, he can literally wear a t-shirt that says, "Fuck everything," across his chest. And it gets his point across quite eloquently. And on other days, when he's feeling better and wants to make an entirely different kind of point, he puts on a t-shirt with Captain America's shield on it. That one tends not to stay on as long, but it does look quite fetching on the carpet of Steve's bedroom. Fucking with Tony Stark. It definitely gets its own category. Basically, from the moment that 3-year-old toddles up to Bucky while he's helping clean up the Avengers mess after the fiasco with the mole people coming up out of the ground in Central Park, because he's ready to put the arm to use, but not quite ready to put himself behind the barrel of a gun yet, and looks at his metal arm, souped up by Stark himself, with red and gold racing stripes, while Bucky had been distracted and armed with repulsors to break up debris for the day, and says, "Are you Iron Man? While the actual Iron Man is literally 3 feet behind the little tyke, albeit not in the suit, it's way too much fun to give up. Stark turns around to give Bucky an incredulous look. So Bucky looks the kid straight in the eyes and says, "Yes. Yes, I am." "I thought Iron Man was..." the kid says, struggling for words. Behind him, Stark's eyes are huge, practically dinner plates of, "What the hell do you think you're doing?" And it doesn't get any better when the kid finishes, "Shorter." Bucky looks up, just for a second, to see Stark's mouth fall open in indignation. And then tells the kid, "Do you want to hear a secret? One from Iron Man, who is me? I put platforms in the boots of my suit to make me taller." "You're a dead man, Barnes," Stark tells him later. "You're so lucky that I didn't want to crush the ridiculous hopes and dreams of that tiny brat." But it made his day to have talked to Iron Man. "Especially what with you not being in the suit these days," Bucky says, as innocent as he can, before looking pointedly at Iron Man's boots. "Besides, I didn't say anything that wasn't true." "Yeah, well, I'm pretty sure my dick is still bigger than yours, so," Stark says. And from then on, it's basically war. He finds out every last thing that makes Stark twitch, and exploits it. Stark particularly hates it whenever Bucky or Steve do anything that Stark considers to be insufficiently old-fashioned. At least, as long as Stark wasn't the one who introduced them to it. So Bucky gets an iPod, loads it up with all the top 40 hits he can find, and memorizes every last word. He gets a Bluetooth earpiece and keeps his headphones looped over his neck like all the kids are doing nowadays, wears big ugly sneakers and skinny jeans, and introduces Steve to the fist bump. There's one incident in particular, when the Avengers are all together for a briefing and Bucky's basically just hanging around for the free coffee, as Thor tries to detail the intricate series of alliances, betrayals, affairs, one-sided romantic yearnings, deaths, resurrections, engagements, and broken engagements that have ultimately led to some Asgardian named Carnula coming to Earth to... well, Bucky is not entirely clear on that. But apparently it's nefarious and important that each of the Avengers knows every last detail about Carnilla's life, which Thor is attempting to map out on a whiteboard. It's messier than most of the Nazi battle plans that Bucky has ever dealt with, even after Sam convinced Thor to use different colored markers for different relationships. Thor is explaining for the fifth time that although Carnilla is an enchantress, she's not the enchantress, because that distinction is apparently vital, despite the fact that they know fuck all about either of their plans, when Bucky brings Steve a new cup of coffee. Steve takes it gratefully, and Bucky half expects him to chug it. "Okay, so if Carnilla's not the Enchantress, what does the Enchantress want with the Nornstones?" Stark demands. And Thor throws his arms out to the side in an equally frustrated shrug. "As I have said, I know not!" The opportunity is too perfect. Steve just raising his coffee cup to his lips when Bucky leans down and murmurs to him, "Thought he was on third base." Steve chokes on his coffee. His coughing attracts everyone else's attention, but once he's got his breath back, he looks up at Bucky and says, "Naturally." "No, who's on first?" Bucky says, and offers Steve a fist bump, which Steve reciprocates. "Oh, don't do that with old stuff. That's just not okay, Stark says. What about you and Churchill's V for Victory sign you throw up every time someone's got a camera, huh, Stark? Buggy says. I thought you were a man of the future. Victory is timeless. Abbott and Costello is ancient. Perhaps this is a conversation best left for once Midgard is no longer in peril, Thor says. But Bucky can tell he's just sore because he doesn't get the joke. He doesn't jump in on this particular fight with Carnilla. And, it turns out, the Enchantress, the Executioner, and a brief appearance from a magical specter of Loki. But he finds a high point and keeps everyone in the loop over the comms. He knows better than to endanger an op, but he also knows Steve well enough to know that when he says, I don't give a darn's got an Ornstone in left field, Steve will understand it. Tony swears a blue streak, and Steve's breathless chuckle over the comms is just icing on the cake. Actually fucking Steve. Bucky doesn't have to be inconspicuous about buying lube or condoms. He doesn't have to worry about accidentally brushing his hand against Steve's and giving them away. He doesn't have to bite his lip to keep quiet at night, because Stark has soundproofed the entire tower. He doesn't have to hide the hickeys or marks that Steve leaves on him when Bucky asks him to. And even if he were still in the army, they wouldn't be able to kick him out. And maybe one day, when he's sure his head's screwed on right, and when Steve's laid off a bit with the overprotectiveness, Bucky can buy 2 men's wedding bands, and it'll be legal in New York. The end. Reader's notes. So if you've heard any of my other podfic, you know that this isn't quite my regular speaking voice. I'm coming down from a nasty cold, and it's that stage where it's not all in your sinuses, it's moving down into your lungs, and you wake up every morning and you're like, this is what Steve Rogers felt like every day, isn't it? And then you're just sad and phlegmy and disgusting. Anyway, I read this fic at least 9 months ago. And earlier today, Kiara Sayre put up a post on Tumblr about how blanket permission to podfic is granted. Go forth and make a podfic of all the works. And I was like, this is a thing I need to do. So I whipped GarageBand out literally 5 minutes after reading that particular Tumblr post because blanket permission is so great. I love this story so much. I had to stop and laugh, and then laughing turned into coughing, and coughing turned into a lot of time editing out nasty, bodily noises. Sorry, you didn't need to know that. Basically, I just wanted to say that I love the story so much, and you can tell because I didn't even wait for my voice to come back to normal before I podficked it. Thank you for listening. I hope you got as much enjoyment out of the story as Bucky gets enjoyment out of the future. And, I hope that you're having a good day. Have a nice day. Bye, guys.